number you have dialed has been changed. The new number is...
Welcome to The Stuart Knight Show, where interesting, intriguing, and exciting people engage in unscripted exchanges of ideas, stories, and perspectives. It's not an interview. It's a powerful conversation.
Hey there, everybody. Welcome to The Stuart Knight Show. This is, of course, your host, Stuart Knight, with another powerful conversation for you. And I would like to welcome my new friend, David Thorne, to the show. Welcome, David.
Hello. Thank you very much, Stuart. Happy to be here.
My pleasure. My pleasure. So it's one of those conversations. I think this is one of my favorite conversations because it puts me into a situation where, you know, I'm speaking to somebody who I've never met before. And you and I were put in touch with a good friend of ours named Chris Anderson, who's an Australian, and you are a Kiwi. And I'm a Canadian, and I love this. You know, this is where people get to listen in, and they get to see what happens when two people who have never met before have a conversation. You and I have literally had maybe 2 or 3 minutes in talking before this conversation. So let's get right into it. Let's have a powerful conversation, shall we?
I love it. Sure.
Awesome. So the thing that obviously intrigues me about you is that, you know, our mutual friend Chris has told me that you have done one of those things that guys like myself have done and people that I always resonate with who've taken a little bit of the road less traveled. And from what I understand, you're going to have to correct me from time to time. Like, did you leave your job and then go up to the Arctic or to the Antarctic, or was it something that you're still working now and you're just doing those kinds of things on the side? But I was really intrigued. I want to hear about that trip that you just went on recently.
Oh, yeah, fantastic journey. Just before I give you a rundown on that, though, I've got to correct you first up. So I'm actually Canadian as well.
You are?
I'm, half Kiwi, half Canadian, but lived in Australia for at least half my life. So a bit of a mixed up combination there. But
my God.
My mother's side is all sort of Vancouver, BC based. So.
Oh, very cool. Well,
there you go.
Nice to speak to a fellow Canadian then.
Don't let the accent fool you. I'm very much... White and red.
That's great. Well, I guess, you know, actually, that's the one thing that makes you Canadian. You have to have an accent living in this country.
It's a lovely accent, I must say.
Yeah, it is. It is. So tell me about this trip.
What a journey. So basically, I was, I've been in the professional services, so management consulting for practically all of my career, based in Australia, Asia, and then in Hong Kong. I got an amazing opportunity to go on a trip to Antarctica. Mm-hmm. It was a innovation and disruptive technology think tank. So a little bit different to your standard cruise down, check out the penguins and the whales and that sort of thing. So we literally jumped on a plane from Punta Zedanes in southern Chile. Mm-hmm. Down to King George Island in Antarctica. And there we set off on an expedition of sorts with a Canadian company, actually Quark Expeditions, who took us deep into the south, you know, down to the Antarctic Circle. And on the way we had amazingly powerful conversations about all types of, you know, new disruptive business models, disruptive for purpose, disruptive for positive growth and a better tomorrow. So really reinventing traditional business models. And it was a combination of really entrepreneurs, venture capitalists, successful business leaders from all over the world, really pulled together to, you know, dig into some of the core challenges facing, you know, business, humanity, and society around the globe.
Okay. So now how did you get onto this trip? I would imagine there's hundreds of thousands of people that would love to go on a trip like that. So how did you manage to find yourself on that plane?
A bizarre sort of roundabout way, but essentially I was very much focused on exploring other avenues from my base in Hong Kong, and I was in London discussing certain business concepts with startups over there and around the world. And I basically got a call one day from a Brazilian chap asking me if I was interested in going to Antarctica. And I think through some of the conversations that I was having and meeting people along the way, you know, my name got passed along and I got an invite to jump on board and get involved in the trip. So
okay, so
just out of the blue, really.
Yeah. How many people were there on this trip, approximately?
There were 120.
Oh, wow, okay.
The main source was Australia because the event organisers were running it out of Australia, but it had a pull factor from all over the world. So okay. I obviously came from Hong Kong. There were several Americans and Canadians even, a lot of Kiwis and Aussies and a few Europeans as well.
Very cool.
But really a big mixing pot and some fantastic outcomes from that journey as well.
So everyone, I'm hearing this word disruptive a lot lately. And when I'm speaking in the corporate market, quite often people will say that they're trying to disrupt things. Why do you think this word has become such a hot word, and is it a good word? Is it accurate?
I don't really like the word, to be honest. Mm-hmm. Disruptive sounds negative.
Yeah.
That's why I guess I tagged on, positive disruption. I like the word smart disruption.
Right.
Smart, positive disruption. So really it's targeting traditional ways of doing things that potentially are ingrained in society or business and potentially aren't the most effective or positive way of doing it. So you're disrupting these traditional business models or societal structures. So you're looking at alternative means to deliver a higher value to whoever it is you're dealing with. So it's a big sort of talking point in the startup space, and everyone wants disruptive tech, and a lot of financiers tag large multiples just to that word itself. So
right.
it's quite very much a buzzword. However, I would promote the use of it in a more constructive way.
Yeah. Do you, and I agree with you there. I mean, but regardless of the word, whether we like it or not, do you find yourself in situations where you'll go to an event like this and you walk away, you're all jacked up, you're positive, you're energized, and you've come up with fantastic ideas, but then, of course, you bring it back to the real world where the majority of people like to move at a snail's pace. And I think about, for example, some of the big companies that I work with, where if you were to offer them an innovative idea, you might have one or two who would say, oh, that's fantastic. But trying to change an entire culture in a company that's got 80,000 employees is an enormous task. I mean, once you come up with the ideas, how do you implement them when we live in a world where there's so much resistance to change?
Definitely. No, I resonate with that very, very strongly. And I think a lot of the conversations and networks on the boat, people were developing, at different levels of developing the concept. So some were, businesses that had already begun, some were early stage seeking startup capital, some were just airy fairy concepts. And so the outcomes in implementing those discussions happened at different stages, but I do see the challenges of talking about such worldly events and problems and being on a constant high and energetic discussion and then coming back to the real world and struggling with some of the standard barriers that exist within both companies and communities. It takes a lot, there's definitely a come down period, I think, post such a trip like this, but it's persistence conquers resistance is my motto.
Mm-hmm.
And making sure you're staying positive and energized and around positive people is a key part of that. And of course, if you're looking to, as many of the people on the boat were looking to engage and begin businesses, making sure they have the traction and momentum and the advisory capacity to be able to deliver on them, what was key post Antarctica.
Yeah. Well, it's funny. It's something that, that I have given a lot of thought to, where it's like you do find yourself in these situations where you've got these great ideas and even for myself as an entrepreneur for the last 20 years, I'll be driving home from a speech or I'll be coming back on a plane from some country. And I start thinking about, oh my God, wouldn't it be great if, we did something like this? And you have to pull teeth. I mean, the one thing that I've recently launched is this thing called the Powerful Group. And the Powerful Group is this event where we bring strangers together to have what we call powerful conversations with each other. And it's quite simple. You move every 15 minutes into a new conversation on a big topic. It could be something like, do you think there's life on other planets, or what's the biggest problem facing the world, or what's the biggest lesson you've ever learned, whatever it happens to be. And now you're having that conversation with a stranger. But what's interesting is that we'll have, let's say, 60, 70 people who are RSVP for an event. And the second I send out the questions, you'll have this huge drop-off. And I know now the reason that we have this drop-off is because so many people are so afraid of even just having the conversation, let alone getting into the point where they do have the conversation, then do get the great ideas, and then do want to implement it. And I guess on some level, we just have to accept that we're kind of like scientists. I've always looked at scientists and I thought, man, what's it like to know that you're going to be researching, trying to find one small thread to the cure for cancer? And your work might not be really come into play for another 200 years, but they just accept they're just part of some much bigger solution, I guess.
The human brain, it's a fascinating thing. There's got to be a chemical reaction that happens when you get caught up in your head on an idea or a concept or a product, because it feels so great and you get involved and you're building and you're planning, and then you get to a point where you don't want to come up against some of the obstacles around digging deeper into some of the issues or some of the barriers. And I guess that's a huge pitfall for a lot of entrepreneurs as well. And I know I do the same. I just like you driving home, if I'm on my computer, I'll start drafting up a blank email and I'll just go on a massive tangent about some certain topic.
Right.
And I'll start researching and digging. But then, I'll get back stuck into, the way of standard way of life, and potentially maybe I'll hit a few roadblocks, and then that whole energetic vibe, it's like adrenaline, isn't it?
It is.
It hits you and drives you to a point, and then it's about continuing that momentum and having the ability and support around you to continue on that journey.
Well, that's the key. Let me ask you, do you think that, because I do think that obviously we have millions of people on this planet who do have great ideas and who do want to make the world a better place and who do want to challenge status quo and, as we say, disrupt things. However,
definitely.
Do you feel that we should be spending more time working on an infrastructure to support a daily, space of being able to engage in these new ideas, or are we going the right way about this? I mean, you know what I'm saying?
You've hit a great point, and collaboration and communication and connecting, these are key words that really epitomizes the future of bringing ideas together and people together. And I know that's a lot of what you're about, but operating in siloed situations and businesses or communities can, to me, is such an old way of doing things.
Mm-hmm.
I love meeting people, and people are everything to me, and having conversations with exciting, new and different, entertaining characters are just, the most fantastic thing. And when you're talking about business ideas, opening up different parts of the world and different discussions and doing extensive research across those areas is critical. And there are platforms, that work. There are incubation hubs and accelerators that network people around the globe with certain ideas, innovation spaces of the likes. But they're definitely fragmented, and it's just very difficult to bring everyone together,
right?
Who's discussing on a particular topic. Researchers and scientists do well because they have a hypothesis and they have, a testing theorem that they are looking to prove, so that they tend to do it very well. But the issue I find is when entrepreneurs with fantastic ideas, or even businesses like to keep everything in-house. Advisors are selling a particular way of doing something to someone else, and and entrepreneurs are also worried about sharing their ideas as well.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in the case of having them stolen. So
yeah, it's. Yeah, I really do believe that we need to, and I would go as far, and I'm sure you'd agree with this, to starting at the very grassroots levels of like right down to kindergarten, where children from day one, maybe even earlier, but children from day one and people from day one are told that sharing ideas and creating ideas and expressing thoughts that may go against the mainstream is does not have to be something that is obscure or abnormal or uncommon. It could be just as common as drinking water. And that is something that I think that we need to create, is that infrastructure across the board. And I think obviously the school system is the best way to start with that, simply because we've already got an infrastructure of an actual physical space that people go to every day. What better place to start those kinds of ideas and those kinds of policies and those kinds of protocols, where people actually spend part of their day engaging in just completely off the wall thought, like the kind of experience that you just had in Antarctica. You know, I was thinking about this just today, and I always love doing this. I love thinking about how in a thousand years from now, I always try to hypothesize what people are going to look back at and laugh at with respect to the human race. And, you know, what are they going to look at us and they're going to think to themselves, like, oh, can you believe they did that? And I always try to finish that sentence. And the one thing that I finished that sentence with today as I was going for a walk was, you know, I think that there's going to be a time when people look back at us and say, can you believe that all of those people worked? You know, like they went to work every day.
Yeah.
9 to 5.
It's I couldn't agree more. It's a fascinating thing to consider, isn't it? I mean, we're constantly looking back thinking, you know, thinking that exact thing about the past. And, you know, you've touched on one of my biggest frustrating models, which is the education system at an early age. You know, think of a structure that is still organized by, you know, year of birth and run groups of children through a machine that's very much like a manufacturing plant, you know, organized mm-hmm. by subject and year and the likes. I think there's a huge amount of work and there is being done in the alternative education space to open people's minds up to allow the youth to focus on areas that they're passionate about, that they want to be part of and open up that idea generation and creative sort of way of thinking that often gets you know, drilled out of us at a young age. And
right.
I mean, it's different in different regions of the world and different systems, but there's definitely a major part of the planet's population that are being, you know, limited by the way that sort of traditional structure operates.
Yeah, and the opportunity. I mean, I don't know how we don't get up and politicians especially don't get up every morning going, holy crap, could you just imagine what we could do if we were to tap into this space where we have essentially, you know, the attention of young people for, call it, 6 hours a day, and we could totally change the way that we engage those people, and the optimization and the products and the ideas, all the stuff that would come out of that would be mind blowing. And I just don't know how people don't get up and go, holy crap, why aren't we doing that? Because, you know, they say that most people go their entire lives and they only retain 5% of everything they learn at school.
Yeah.
And I thought to myself, like, you know, could you imagine if we had, you know, if I remembered what my partner's interests were only 5% of the time, I think that would probably be something that people would consider alarming. If you apply that statistic to a lot of areas, people would think that's crazy. But we apply it to one of the most important areas, education, and yet people aren't feeling like we have an epidemic on our hands. And I don't know. So what was one of the things that one of your big takeaways from Antarctica? What was one of the biggest things you did learn?
Look, I had three very big takeaways for me, actually.
Yeah.
And I know the first one is something that you stand for as well, that essentially people are everything. You know, you can't put a value on connecting with people. Mm-hmm. It is invaluable. And I saw this really unfold in the fact of just having a diverse group of people together from all parts of the world with all different focuses, all energized and pumped to have, you know, engaging conversations with people and really, you know, everyone was there ready to connect. So I saw that in its, you know, most true form. And if basically from that, I was able to continue connecting with people around the globe. And that's sort of what I've been doing for the last 4 months. So that's one of the major things I learned. People are everything.
Okay. Can I ask you a quick question to that before we go to your second and third?
Sure.
Do you think that we are, like, do you think, because obviously people will say, well, we are connecting to each other. We are, you know, with Skype and with Facebook and Twitter and all these different things. Now we are connected to individuals from around the world more than we ever were before. But here you were in a face-to-face connection. Do you feel like there is something better about that? Or do you think it's just as good being able to connect with all these people via Facebook and Twitter?
I think you need to have meaningful connections. So if you can have a meaningful connection with someone virtually, fantastic. I feel we're having a meaningful connection right now. I feel like I could give you a call tomorrow to have a chat.
But it
just really depends. The medium to me is not crucial. I am connected with people via, you know, Skype, Facebook all the time. Mm-hmm. But it's about, yeah, having a deeper and meaningful connection. It's the thing is, when you pass someone on the street or you're at the coffee shop and you don't connect with people because of the situation, there's no meaningful connection there.
Right.
You can't pretend to understand or appreciate the value of a connection without, you know, having the effort, putting in the effort or the time to make that meaningful.
Right.
So that to me is, and I think what I saw on the Antarctic expedition was that people were so committed to having meaningful connections with people, with everyone, that I saw that and it just absolutely multiplied. The value of that just multiplied. And
right.
So that's really what I saw and what I've taken to having meaningful connections with, you know, I'd like to say 90% of the people I come in contact, maybe that's too high, but honestly, I think on average, well, I'm guessing here, but maybe we only can, certain people on average, maybe only connect with 20% of the people they engage with, and reconnecting with current, you know, your colleagues or your friends, that's not what I'm talking about here. I'm talking about going outside of your current group and really, you know, meeting new people and connecting with them and being committed to having a conversation.
You know, it's funny. I think you just hit on probably one of the things that I feel is most important is that you have to enter, you know, that conversation, and you're not going to be able to do it 100% of the time. But if most of the time you enter a conversation with somebody where you genuinely expect great things to happen, or you believe that things amazing things can happen, well, you then end up intentionally and deliberately setting yourself up for that to happen. And I think that's probably one of the biggest mistakes people make is that they make the assumption that, well, if I start speaking to this person sitting next to me on the bus, the likelihood is that it will go nowhere, or that person will think I'm weird. Or, you know, if I make the effort while sitting with my colleague over lunch here to ask them questions that go beyond the surface, well, you know what? It's most likely going to be considered taboo and not well received, or it probably won't go anywhere, so there's no sense of trying. But the people who, you see, when you go onto a trip to Antarctica with 120 people, every individual who is there has already made the assumption that everyone else there has something to bring to the table.
Dead right.
Right? And because of that, they enter the conversation in a way that they probably wouldn't enter a conversation with maybe one of their colleagues or the person sitting next to them on the bus. But if they allowed themselves to believe that the person sitting them next to them on the bus could have been somebody who was in fact invited to go to Antarctica, then they wouldn't be missing that opportunity. So I think you really hit the nail on the head of the importance of just allowing yourself to believe in the possibility. And if you do, you will approach it in a much more meaningful way. So what were the other two kind of takeaways that you got from this trip?
So the next one was really, as I was going through a decision point in my career and which path I wanted to take and which direction to really to go down, you know, what I realized was that, you know, there's only one person that's going to be responsible for the path you choose, and that's you.
Right.
There's only one person responsible for choosing your path. There's no one that's going to push you down. You know, no one's going to walk in and say, all right, this is what you're going to do, Stuart. You're now on this path. Here you go. Bang, bang, bang. Here's all your toolkit. Off you go.
Right.
You know, you've got to really sit down and think about, you know, what you're passionate about, what sort of, you know, skills and capabilities you want to continue expanding, you know, what your legacy, you know, you want your legacy to be and really direct your path down that way, because there's so many influences in our lives, and to take a step back and say, hold on a second, you know, what am I really about? What do I want to do? What do I want to be known for? What type of person do I want to be?
Right.
I think these are the type of questions that not a lot of us ask ourselves, and maybe certain life events, you know, everything happens for a reason. Obviously, we're built up of all our different experiences, and that makes who we are. Certain people's life experiences, you know, challenge them to ask these questions. But what I realized is that, you know, only you can answer them. No one's going to sit down and answer them for you.
That's right.
You know, to go as far as say, well, no one really cares. I mean, people do care. Obviously, yeah. You've got your family and your friends, but yeah. You are responsible. You are in charge of your own journey and your own path and your own choices. So it's about time you step up to the plate and start thinking about it and taking those tough decisions, making those tough decisions.
Well, you know, it's funny that you say that, because it just reminds me of a conversation. Well, I was being pre-interviewed for a podcast, ironically, that I'm going to be a guest on. And one of the questions, it's for a marketing podcast. And one of the questions near the end was, do you have any final parting tips for people who are in the marketing field? And I would imagine that my answer is not very common, but my answer was, my parting tip would be to know why you're even doing it. And to really ask yourself, like, I think a lot of people will just go, hey, if I market this product or this service in this particular way, I can get this many hits and I can make this much money and I can be this popular or this, you know, retain this great power or whatever it might be. But then very few people ever step back and actually ask themselves, why am I doing this? Like, why do I even want to market in the first place? And if you can ask yourself that question and then come up with answers that resonate with you and that inspire you and that excite you, then figure out a way to get lots of hits and make lots of money and retain power. But don't just do it just because your MBA business professor told you that you should do it, or because women think you're hot when you do it, or whatever silly reason that you do these things. And so,
I totally agree. I mean, you know, it's not what you do, it's why you do it. And I think a lot of us have come across that term, but purpose and the why is just so important these days.
Oh yeah, I've been thinking a lot about this lately, because I'm looking to, you know, possibly buying a house in the city, and it's interesting that obviously in Toronto, like many cities around the world, there's these crazy bidding wars, and people, you know, a house gets listed at $500,000 and it goes for $700,000, but I just find it funny, because I do try to live my life with as much awareness as possible. And I'll find myself watching these people do this, and I realize it's not like they're fighting and bidding because they're in desperate need of shelter. These people are working class business professionals. They've already got a roof over their head, but they're fighting and they're emotionally involved in spending more money than they should, simply because they bought into something that they think they need. And that might be living in the right neighborhood, or that might be having a certain type of house that has a certain prestige to it, or whatever. But if they just allowed themselves to step back and go, why do I think I need this house? The answer might lead them as far away from a bidding war as possible. But they don't even ask that question. They just get caught up in it and they just do it. And then once again, like so many people, they live life without awareness.
I think, yeah, I mean, I agree. Yeah, it's actually, I've been thinking about this. It's a difficult topic. It's easy to talk about. Mm-hmm. But let me ask you, you know, why do you do what you do?
Great question. I think that for me, it's like so many things. But people sometimes will say to me, I don't know what I should do with my life. And my answer is always the same. I always say, start anywhere, because anywhere is still a place, and anywhere will lead you everywhere. And that's really what happened for me, is that I had no idea that I'd be having this conversation with you 20 years ago. I had no plans of even speaking in the corporate market or writing books or any of the things I've done. But what happened for me was way back when I was young and growing up, I might do something as simple as organize an event in my neighborhood for the kids. Or maybe I was the guy that was on student council, which I was, and I would see what would happen when I would do something that would cause someone else's eyes to light up, or I would do something that would put a smile on someone's face or make them feel confident about themselves. And the second you do anything, as I'm sure you can relate to, that makes people feel good and that makes them feel confident and that makes them want to do more and to stretch themselves, it's like the greatest drug of all time. And
yeah.
So as soon as I took that drug, I was like, hit me up again.
Doing it for the drugs.
That's right. Exactly. All the drugs that I get from my job. But yeah, I loved it. And so it's funny because when I first started, I was, you know, like anyone, I think, I always had that voice in the back of my head saying, oh, well, you know what? We've managed to survive another year, but well, we all know it's probably going to come to an end next year. We can't keep riding this train. And you just keep going. And then the thing that gets you out of bed, and on the days when you're about to go bankrupt, or the days when you think no one cares about what you're doing, is that you get that taste again of that drug where someone sends you an email and says, hey, I just want you to know that I watched your show, or I read your book, or I read a blog, or saw a video, and it made me leave a really bad relationship, or it made me quit my job and really start kind of following my dreams, or maybe move to a new country, whatever it is. And then boom, the drug is back in the veins, and they just bought me two or three more weeks of positive energy, and you get knocked down again and you get back up. And so, but the thing for me now is really just that drug of wanting to make the world a better place, as cliche as it sounds. But listen, before we go, because I know we've only got a short period of time, because I know you're flying out today, I do want to ask you, what was the third thing that you took away from your trip to Antarctica?
The third, I think I've wrapped it up into the second, but essentially it's, you know, it's all about, and everyone knows this. I think everyone deep down knows this. It's all about the journey and not the destination.
Right.
And that's been thrown about a lot, but I think when I look back, just the way you mentioned before, that, you know, when you look forward, you can never really see what you've created or what you're going to create or you know, who you are to be. And that's because it's all about the journey. You know, it's every little experience is, you know, combined to produce the sum of who you are.
Right.
And without taking, you know, proper reflection of each and every one of those experiences, the good, the bad, the ugly, you're missing out on what's happening around you. And, you know, is some of the worst experiences that I've had have been the most powerful and really contributed to who I am today and the type of people I'm connecting with and the type of decisions that I make. So
is that right? Is there an experience that comes to mind that, you know, you would have in the moment maybe wanted to change, but you're glad it happened now?
Oh, I mean, just many I can think of. Right. I went through a period of being torn between moving to Australia. You know, as a young Kiwi lad living in Auckland, and the parents wanted to move to the sunny state of Queensland. And of course, all young Kiwis of avid All Black, this is a national rugby team, All Black fans, you know,
right.
Huge rivalry with the Australian teams, and just really didn't want to go. Mm-hmm. You know, I boarded for 2 years at the school I was at, refusing to go.
Okay.
And then I think I went over for a holiday and checked it out, and you know, it was the sun was out, the surf was good, the beaches were better, and I'll give it a try. And
right.
And for me, those 2 years were some of the worst times of my life. But having gone through them, you know, taught me amazing things. And having gone through that challenge of being separated from my family and then getting separated from my friends and moving into a new environment and, you know, people who are put in challenging situations and different environments, you know, develops certain types of skills and things like that. So
no question.
That was one for me. And there's many, but there's micro experiences as well, particularly around how best to interact with people and the like. So,
yeah,
you know, taking everything on board and having a little period of reflection is always a positive thing.
Well, I've always loved the idea that there's no possible way that you could even understand the concept of hot unless you know the concept of cold. You know, you can't know the concept of love unless if you've ever fallen out of love or if you've never had it. You always need the opposite to be able to appreciate the other side. And it's amazing how many people on this planet will do everything they can to avoid the pain or the ugliness or the sadness or the rejection or the insecurity, because they feel like that if they avoid that, that they're going to make their lives better, but not realizing that all the wonderful things that will come from life, the only way to experience them and to know that they're an amazing feeling is to go through the opposite so that you have that reference point. And so the fact that you went through that at your boarding school and then all the other things that you and myself and other people listening to this right now have gone through, we know that as much as it sucks in the moment, yeah, you got to cry your tears and you got to, you know, punch the wall from time to time. But at the end of the day, you just have to trust that this is actually leading you to something better. And, you know, I was talking to I was listening to Arianna Huffington, founder, of course, of Huffington Post, on in a live talk in Toronto last week. And she came out and she said, you know, one really great thing. She said, you know, listen, obviously I could not recommend you going out there and making mistakes anymore. You know, go out there, make mistakes, screw up, because it's really going to add so much value to your life. But then she said, but on top of that, in the meantime, why don't you just learn from my mistakes? You don't need to wait. You can do it right now. And there's more than enough information of people out there that have done great things that that we can just read and watch and listen to and say, yeah, okay. Like, I don't need to go out there every time and keep making my own mistakes. There's enough people who've made them ahead of me that proves that it's a great thing. So yeah, yep. I do believe though.
It's tough because when you're, it's easy for you and I to say it, but when you're in that moment, you know, when you're at that low or you're really being challenged, it's, and I myself am challenged, you know, I'm saying it now, but then when I'm in the moment as well, I find it extremely difficult to get the headspace back in the right zone and to really, you know, practice what I preach.
Right.
But, you know, there has to be a draw card. There has to be something, a tag in your brain that you can really, really believe in, knowing that, you know, this is what it's about, you know?
Yeah. It's funny. One of my favorite things, well, I guess one of the funniest things that people say to me, they'll say, you know, because I'm a motivational speaker. Well, at least people call me that. And they'll say, do you ever get depressed or do you ever get sad or do you ever get down? And I'm like, just because I'm a professional speaker where I talk about things that are, you know, about positivity doesn't mean that I bound out of bed every morning or that, you know, when crappy days come that I don't find myself wanting to give up or thinking I'm not good enough. Of course, I'm a human being. But but like you said, it's in those moments where they don't last long. And I come back to that space of realizing that there's more to me still yet until I die and to trust that even though it's a bad day, I'm going to learn something from it. But so listen, I know that we're going to get off the phone because I promised I'd keep you on time. But before I let you go, just tell myself and everyone listening, what's next for you? What's the next big thing that you're going to do or you want to do?
Look, what's next? What one big thing? There's so many. So I'm diving into the world of creating you know, innovative businesses. I'm really aligning myself to passionate founders and working with them to create you know, a better future. So I'm diving into areas that I'm passionate about, interested in, the world of expeditionary adventure, film and creative tech, you know, alternative banking models and sustainable transportation. I'm sucking it all up, you know.
I love it.
I really decided that there's certain things in this world that I'm really passionate about, and my previous journey wasn't really exposing me to them enough. Mm-hmm. So everything that I'm doing now is totally devoted to putting myself around the people I want to be around, you know, mm-hmm. focusing on the types of topics and issues and challenges in the world that I'm passionate about solving and working towards and solving, and really committing to taking every sort of experience as a positive. So that's what's next, and that is a constant journey and a continual expedition for me. So
that's great.
Very, very mixed.
That's amazing. Well, you know, it's funny like I said, you know, you and I, we've never met, and it's our first time talking voice to voice, but I can tell already that you are an individual that believes in the importance of following your passion, following your heart, and just, you know, when you get excited about something, realize that, hey, I'm excited about this for a reason, whether it's sustainable transportation or anything that you mentioned. And so good on you, my friend, for being willing to go down that path. And of course, we know you're going to screw up a few times along the way, and
you can be sure of
it. You'll want to bang your head against the wall a couple times, but I look forward to hearing about your adventures, and I really look forward to meeting you face to face someday. But stay on the line with me for a little bit longer. I'm just going to close off the show here, but it's been an absolutely fabulous time talking to you. Now, if people want to kind of stay in touch with you, is there anywhere they can go? Do you have a Twitter handle? Do you have a website or something that you want to send people to?
Yeah, I can send something around, you know, my email, dthorn@mail.com if you need it.
Right.
But look, yeah, open to connecting with anyone who wants to catch up on anything we've discussed, and people are my thing. So please reach out if you want to connect either through that email or through Stuart, and I'd love to catch up.
Awesome, awesome. Well, thanks, David. Stay on the line there, but I really appreciate you being a part of the show. You were a really fun guy to talk to. This has been definitely a powerful conversation for me.
Appreciate it. Thanks, Stuart.
All right, thank you.
The number you have dialed has been changed. The new number is...
Thank you for tuning in to The Stuart Knight Show. We hope you've enjoyed this powerful conversation. People are fascinating, and so are you. And the right questions will prove it.
We'll prove it.